Fremantle Media. Based on a true story. Water ripples far into the distance under an overcast sky. Peter Strauss. Henry Zerny. Geese stand under trees at the water's edge. A woman is walking through shallow water wearing sneakers, shorts, and an untucked blouse. My Father's Shadow, the Sam Shepard story. The shore is lined with rocks that lead to a well-manicured green landscape. Lindsay Frost. Jean Bourgeois. A young boy walks toward the water with a garden fork. He crouches down and looks through the rocks.
Mom, I think I found an egg!
The woman runs to him.
Where? Let's see.
He hands it to her.
Oh, gee, it's nifty.
Dad said the Indians believe eggs have special powers.
Yeah? What kind of powers?
I don't know.
Maybe magical powers. To heal people like Dad.
Maybe.
Yeah. Race back to the house. Come on!
Wait!
They run away from the water's edge. They pass tall trees and cross a wooden footbridge. Toward a very large house. The mother looks at her son as they run side by side. A 1950s style truck pulls up that reads Dick's Cleaning Service. A young man gets out of the passenger side as the mother and son run to the house.
Yeah, you did it. Too fast for me.
Sorry to bother you, Mrs. Shepard, but I left my ladder from yesterday.
Oh, it's no bother. It's in the basement.
Come on, I'll show you, Mr. Lund.
The driver gets out of the truck. Mrs. Shepard glances at him, then walks inside. Two nurses walk past a red convertible and a sign that reads Bayview Hospital. In an operating room, a doctor is performing surgery.
My wife is going to kill me when I get home.
How's her signs?
Stable, 102 over 70.
She says I'm too tired for sex.
Maybe you should give up medicine.
Give up seeing you?
Suction.
A doctor with glasses glares at the nurse. The first doctor continues to work.
Wait.
Damn it.
It was a second tumor.
Up against the vessel artery.
It's not resectable. We'll have to close.
Hold it.
He looks at the doctor with glasses.
I can do this.
Sam, you'll kill her.
No, Robert, you're wrong. Narrow retractor and a dissector. I'm going to save this girl's life.
Sam winks at the nurse. Meanwhile, at the house near the water, the young boy is helping Mr. Lund carry the ladder. The other man walks toward him.
I ought to put you on salary.
No, thanks. I'm going to be a doctor.
Just like your daddy, huh?
The boy nods.
Well, I want you to have a good 4th of July. But don't get too close to the fireworks.
Yes, sir, Mr. Eberling.
The boy runs to the house. Inside, his mother's on the phone.
Well, I thought you said you would be home by 5. Oh, of course, something always comes up. Well, there's always some emergency or some operation. Meanwhile, I'm stuck in this house with your friend who refuses to do...
She sees her son listening through the screen door.
Just remember that your folks said they might stop by tonight along with the house. Bye. Love you.
The boy stares as she hangs up and walks toward him.
I just miss him. That's all.
Me too.
He sits at a table.
I know you do. But he's a very busy man with lots of responsibilities.
He's the best surgeon in the city. I think I'll be home a lot more when the new baby comes.
I'm sure he will.
Okay? She kisses his forehead. At the hospital, Sam and Robert walk up to people in a waiting area.
She's going to be fine.
Oh, God, thank you so much.
Actually, if it hadn't been for my big brother Robert, things might have gone differently.
I'm just glad it all went well.
Oh, thank you.
You can see her once they get her down to intensive care.
The doctors walk away, and the woman hugs a man. Sam and Robert are walking down a hallway.
It took quite a gamble.
Be happy, Robert. Just saved a life.
A nurse bumps into Sam.
Huh? It's
Excuse me, Dr. Sutton.
When are you going to grow up?
Just smiled at her.
It's a refreshing change. No, it isn't funny, Sam. You are a member of an important family with a lot at stake in this hospital.
Excuse me, Dr. Shepard. You're wanted in OR3, staff, accident victim, internal bleeding.
Sam looks at Robert and shrugs.
Judy calls.
At night, Sam pulls up to the large house in the red convertible. Inside, Mrs. Shepard is entertaining.
There must be complications.
Well, anything can happen in an operating room.
Oh, more coffee, Esther.
Yes, thank you.
She pours coffee.
Are you dreading getting fat?
She's not getting fat, Esther. She's pregnant.
Thank you, Sven. It's good to see you and Sam so happy.
Sam walks in.
Oh, don't tell me you've already had your coffee.
How'd it go?
16 units, 8 positive, plus 2 manual cardiac massages. Pretty stabilized, Ed.
And the pediatric tumor?
Fully conscious.
Shop talk. You must be tired.
Oh, Mom, I'm beat.
He kisses his mother and his wife. Sven hands him a drink.
We were starting to worry.
Dad, what I made?
Sam's son walks in wearing pajamas and holding a model airplane.
You made this? By yourself?
Sam looks at it closely.
Well, this is excellent work. Very great attention to detail. Look at this craftsmanship. This is beautiful work, Chip.
It's also time you were in bed, young man. You'll be up late tomorrow with the fireworks.
Let's go.
Good night, Grandpa, Grandma, Mr. and Mrs. Hulk.
Sam follows Chip out.
We'll try it tomorrow. Yeah.
See you for a minute.
Sam follows her into the kitchen.
Where were you?
At the hospital. What do you think?
He puts water in his glass.
You can call if you don't believe me.
I don't need to call. I know you can cover your tracks.
Marilyn, if you're going to give me one of your lectures...
Doesn't it ever stop, Sam?
He turns to face her.
Don't I ever become enough? Give me your hand.
She places his hand on her belly.
Do you know what this is?
Yes.
This is a new life. It's a new chance for all of us.
He rests his forehead against hers.
I just want us to be happy again. Please. Please, Sam, I love you so much.
He strokes her hair. Upstairs, Chip is kneeling at his bedside.
Dear God, please bless my mom and dad, Grandpa and Grandma, and my Uncle Robert. Amen.
He sits on the bed and picks up the model airplane. Sam walks in.
Did you say your prayers?
Yep.
Good boy. Okay.
Sam turns down the bed and sits with Chip.
Now, let me see those hands.
He looks at Chip's open palms.
Beautiful hands, Chip. These hands have greatness in them. Always remember that. You have a special gift in these hands.
He kisses his forehead.
Up it.
Chip gets into bed and Sam tucks him in, then starts tickling him.
Good night, Sam.
Sam turns out the light, walks out, and shuts the door. Chip lies awake in his bed. Then the screen fades to black.
Chip! Chip, wake up! You gotta get out of here! Come on, you don't have time to get dressed!
Robert's standing over Chip's bed and hands him a coat. Chip sees a police officer as he walks out of his room. From Chip's perspective, we move down a hallway toward another officer. Robert keeps his hands on Chip's shoulders as they pass a bloody bedroom door. Inside, a man takes photos. Robert moves Chip past more officers. The carpet on the stairs is stained with blood. Downstairs, the Hawks and a man with glasses are with Sam as he rubs his neck.
Dad!
Sam looks at him with one eye shut. The man with glasses looks from Chip to Sam as Robert leads him away. Sam winces and lowers his head. Outside, cameras flash in Chip's face. The scene is a blur as Robert keeps Chip moving. Chip looks at an empty stretcher in the back of a vehicle and reporters crouch in front of him. Robert opens a car door and Chip gets in. A reporter reaches through the window and touches him on the shoulder. He looks around as cameras continue to flash. Later, a man's looking out the window of an airplane. City lights sparkle through the darkness below.
Hey, you all right?
A man wearing a tie is sitting next to him.
Turned white as a ghost for a second there. Fine, thanks.
The man in the tie picks up something from the floor.
Drop your litter.
Thanks. Sam, I'm getting rid of your father's things. If you want any of it, meet me at the storage building. No later than Wednesday. Ariana.
Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign as we begin our approach into Cleveland.
Hopkins Mr. Gilbert? Mr. Shepard? Anything else before we land?
Nope. For me, thanks.
A flight attendant hands them their jackets and walks away.
You know, it's funny, one of the main reasons I became a lawyer was because of a guy named Shepard. Doctor in the 1950s. Accused of killing his wife in cold blood. Amazing story. Right across town from us. Terry Gilbert.
Terry holds out his hand.
Sam Shepard.
They shake.
You're his son?
Chip nods.
How long will you be in town?
Not long.
Well, listen, I'm hosting a forum at the City Club on the abolition of the death penalty and prison reform. If there's any way you could attend.
Sorry, I can't.
Well, are you sure?
I'm sorry, I can't.
Just in case you change your mind.
Terry hands him a brochure and Chip folds it. At Robert's house, Robert's talking to his housekeeper.
He's going to be living with me for a while, so we'll have to make some changes.
But Dr. Shepard, the boy cries all day.
His mother was murdered less than a week ago, Mrs. Avery. What do you expect?
But I don't know what to do for him.
He'll be in school most of the day, and when he's not, I'll pay whatever overtime is necessary. But starting now, your duties will include seeing to the boy's welfare. Is that clear?
All right.
He takes something from his briefcase, then walks away. Upstairs, young Chip is lying on a bed in pajamas. He looks toward the door as Robert walks in.
I think it best you not go to the funeral. You'd be surrounded by reporters. You'd never stand a chance.
When can I see my father?
I told you, he doesn't want you or Grandma going to visit him in the jail. You'll have to wait until he's released.
But what if he isn't?
There are no what ifs. Your father's innocent, and we're going to prove that at his trial. Anyway,
Robert walks to the bed holding a white sailor's hat.
He gave me this for you.
Chip takes the hat.
You should go to sleep now.
Robert pats him on the shoulder, then starts to leave as Chip gently touches the hat. Robert walks to the door, stops for a moment, then walks out. Later, Chip's grandmother is dressed in black, watching television.
We're here today to witness the burial of Marilyn Shepard, the victim of perhaps the most brutal crime in this city's history. Meanwhile, as evidence continues to mount against the flamboyant Dr. Samuel Shepard, a clearer and clearer picture emerges of a gifted neurosurgeon who saw himself above the law, a womanizer who drove an exotic sports car, a well-to-do osteopath who shunned the norms of polite society. This is the same man who asks us now to believe the unbelievable, that he fell asleep on the couch that night and awoke hours later to hear his wife screaming. That's when he says he ran up the stairs. That's when he says he saw a white form standing beside his wife's bed. That's when he says everything went black.
Chip watches through a door.
You see, Dr. Shepard wants us to believe that the mysterious stranger clubbed him on the back of the neck. He wants us to believe that after regaining consciousness, he ran down the stairs chasing the mystery man, bushy hair, who fled to the lakeshore, where Dr. Shepard supposedly passed out again.
His grandmother shut the door and tears roll down his face. Years later, Chip parks a black SUV near a row of garage doors to a storage facility. A woman is in one of the storage bays and Chip walks inside.
Hello, Ariane.
I'm glad you came.
How are you?
Old. Not so pretty anymore. And you?
I'm working as a dental hygienist, living in Boston. I guess I'm doing okay.
Good.
The room is filled with boxes, and Ariana's looking at photos in an album. She closes it and puts it down.
I have no money, Sam. Not for keeping these things. These are the letters that you sent him in prison.
She hands him a pile of neatly stacked letters. She looks through a box, and Chip looks at an Afghan. He smiles as he tosses it aside. He unwraps some brown paper and stares at its contents. Ariana looks at him.
What is it, Sam?
Chip looks at the stained quilt under the paper.
She died on this blanket.
Years earlier, a crowd rushes into a courthouse.
Court will resume session in 5 minutes.
Near a photo of the bloody quilt, a headline reads, "Can Doc Shepherd wash the blood from his hands?" Inside the courtroom, cameras flash and Chip's grandfather standing behind Sam. Sam turns to his lawyer. Later, an officer's on the stand.
I accompanied Dr. Shepherd to the hospital where he was examined by his father and brother.
And what did you see of the examination?
Well, I didn't see much. The family did their best to keep him away like they were protecting him.
Objection.
Overruled. Did you make any statements at that time regarding Dr. Shepherd's condition?
I told him, I think you killed your wife.
Objection, Your Honor! Order!
Later, Spin Hauk is on the stand.
He said they had made an arrangement. She let him have his affairs, and he promised to keep up appearances for her.
And now, Mr. Hauk, what, was Marilyn content with her husband's swinging lifestyle?
No. She cried on my shoulder many a time. And I know she was hoping that her pregnancy would change him, but we all knew that he'd never stop cheating.
Objection.
Overruled.
Always overruled.
Sam's father stands.
This isn't a trial.
It's a lynch mob.
Dad, please.
No. Refuse.
Robert takes his father out of the courtroom as Sam and his lawyer watch. Sam faces forward with his eyes closed and his head lowered. Later.
We met at the clinic where I was a lab technician.
And after a certain point, your friendship with Dr. Shepherd became sexual.
Yes.
And where did these sex acts take place?
In his car, the Jaguar, or in the Lincoln. And sometimes in the apartment he kept over the clinic.
Later, a reporter is with a judge.
Judge Blanton, what are his chances?
My court, not good. Sam Shepard's guilty as hell.
Roberts with the lawyer.
You'll come apart if we put him on the stand.
Well, what's the alternative? Sit silent in a rigged trial? Where they won't let us back into Sam's house? Where they keep us from the evidence? Where they won't let us see the police reports? And all the while, the press get to tear my family apart like a piece of meat.
Chip is listening.
Look, Robert, I share your frustration.
No, you don't. Your father's not lying in a hospital fighting for his life, and your brother's not already halfway strapped into the electric chair.
In court.
She was found with her pajama pants pulled down and her pajama top pushed up, exposing the anterior chest and pelvis.
The prosecutor is showing slides.
The head and the face bloodied by some 35 blows.
Robert and his mother look down.
Ranging from 4 large gashes to the upper right forehead, skull fractures, broken nose, 2 broken teeth.
Sam starts to sob.
Stop. Please stop.
He buries his face in his hand.
Yeah!
Chip gets off a school bus.
Going to the execution, Chip?
Don't call me that anymore.
Why not? It's still your name, isn't it?
Chip was my nickname. My real name is Sam R. Shepherd, just like my father.
Well, they're gonna kill him, Sam R. Shepherd. They're gonna fry your daddy in the electric chair.
Killer Shepherd gonna die. Killer Shepherd gonna fry.
Killer Shepherd gonna die. Killer Shepherd gonna fry. Yeah!
A boy grabs Chip's sailor hat and runs off with the other boys. Chip looks down as he keeps walking.
Order! Order!
The jury foreman stands in the crowded courtroom.
We find the defendant, Dr. Samuel Holmes Shepherd,
guilty of murder in the second degree.
Attorneys at the prosecutor's table shake hands as handcuffs are put on Sam. As he's led away, he looks back at Chip. Robert has his arm around his mother as they watch Sam being taken out of the room. Years later, Chip is sitting in a dimly lit hotel room with a suitcase and the blood-stained quilt next to him. He picks up a shirt, walks around the bed, and puts it in the suitcase.
Well, well, well.
In a prison uniform, Sam steps out of the darkness.
You had quite a day, didn't you?
Why don't you go haunt someone else?
You don't feel like talking tonight?
To a man who's been dead over 25 years.
Never stopped you before.
Chip looks at the bloody quilt.
Oh, yeah. This is a little different, isn't it, Chip?
You stop calling me that.
Why? You're still a little boy, aren't you? Still scared? Still living in one-room apartments? Without a life? Without a purpose?
Why don't you leave me alone?
Tired of talking to ghosts? You want to start being a man?
I'm a man, all right. I'm a man whose father...
What? Go on.
I'm a man whose father was wrongfully convicted of killing my mother.
Gee, has a real practiced ring to it, Chip.
What do you want from me? I'm here, aren't I? I mean, I came back to Cleveland.
Yeah, but tomorrow you're gonna run, just like you always do when the going gets tough.
Right, you've made your little speech.
No, this time is different. You turn your back this time. You'll spend the rest of your life in this hell with me. Or you can decide if you've got the guts to go to the bottom and look at the truth. The truth about you. The truth about me. The truth about what happened that night.
As Chip stares at him, Sam turns away. Table next to Robert's wallet, change, and keys. A guard puts the items into an envelope. Shortly after, Robert and Chip are with Sam.
So what happened?
Well, we presented our criminalist report, saying essentially that Marilyn had died in a halo of blood, and that the splatter patterns indicate that she was struck by a left-handed assailant.
I'm right-handed. They know that.
They also know that the assailant had to be covered in blood, and that even if you had washed your clothes in the lake, you never would have gotten the blood off the belt.
Blood does not wash out of leather. All of this came up in the trial. What about the evidence of a rape? What about the injury to my neck? What about the fact that I had no motive for murder?
Well, we made the point that Marilyn's teeth, if they had been broken by the blows, the pieces would have been inside her mouth. As it was, they were found alongside the bed because she bit him. When he pulled his arm away, he literally yanked her teeth out.
To be the killer's blood on the stairs. He was bleeding from the wound that she gave him.
We went through it piece by piece with the judge.
And?
He called it opinion and theory and insufficient to order a new trial.
This is America, Bob. Innocent men do not get locked up in prison for life. If someone gets him out.
Do you hear me? You gotta get me out.
Doing the best I can.
Sam looks at Chip.
How you doing, son?
I'm okay.
How you doing at school?
Okay. Some older boys took my cap away, that you gave me.
Well, you're just gonna have to stand up for yourself now. You have to be strong. You hear me? Both of us. We have to be strong for each other.
Sam reaches out to touch his cheek.
No contact. Those are the rules.
How's Mom? She took an overdose of sleeping pills. We found her just in time.
Where's she now?
Staying with me, just like Sam.
Is she gonna be all right?
Well, she's still depressed. But I suppose that's to be expected. But with everything coming out of the trial, and Dad dying the way he did...
You don't think I wouldn't give anything to have him back?
Period's over!
Visiting hours are now over. Visiting hours are now over.
Sam gets up, then crouches near Chip.
You and me, Sam.
He starts to walk away, then looks back at him.
You and me.
Chip stares after him as he goes. Sun shines between Cleveland's skyscrapers. At the Forum for the Abolition of the Death Penalty and Prison Reform, Chip walks to the back of the room.
What about the women who were raped and murdered? What about cops gunned down in the streets? Don't they deserve some kind of justice? The truth is, our whole system is set up to protect the criminal, while the victims of their crimes are virtually ignored.
Excuse me?
Terry Gilbert stands at the podium.
But we have a special guest today, and if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to ask Mr. Sam Shepard if he'd like to give us some of his thoughts on the subject.
Chip stares at him.
I think that there are enough victims in our society without the state creating more, because it's not just the accused or the condemned, it's his family, it's his children who will believe that somehow it was their fault, who will go to sleep every night imagining themselves behind bars and strapped into the electric chair, screaming to please make it stop. But it never, never stops. It never stops.
Later, Chip is walking outside.
Sam!
Terry runs after him.
Wait!
Chip keeps walking.
Please! Look, I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I just thought that your speaking would really mean a lot to a lot of people back there.
I wish I hadn't.
Your father's case is still one of the most important trials in the last 50 years. I mean, people around here are still talking about it like it was last week. So I assume you're here to reopen the investigation.
No, I'm not here to reopen anything. As a matter of fact, I expect to be leaving in the next few days.
Yeah, well, okay, I guess I can understand that. But if there's ever anything I can do for you, I'd appreciate it if you give me a call.
He gives Chip his card.
Thanks.
Terry walks away. Years earlier, young Chip is drawing a picture of his mother near her bed with a frown. He colors around her head with red. Mrs. Avery runs in.
What's that?
I don't know.
Your grandma.
They run upstairs.
Mrs. Shepherd!
Grandma!
Mrs. Shepherd!
Grandma!
Mrs. Shepherd!
Clearly, the effects of this trial, the death of her husband, revelation of her son's many infidelities ultimately led this proud and religious woman to take her own life, devastating the Shepherd family, once considered to be among Cleveland's most respected, and dealing a blow to Dr. Sam Shepherd, who was placed under a suicide watch at the local penitentiary before being permitted to attend his mother's funeral.
Tears run down Chip's face as he watches the funeral on TV. His father kneels beside the coffin. Later, Chip's at the dinner table poking at his food with a fork. Robert is with him.
Stop it.
But it was my fault. If I had woken up the night that my mom got killed, none of this would be happening.
It was not your fault. Your grandma was a coward. Only cowards kill themselves. Do you understand me?
Chip nods, and Robert stands.
There will be no cowards in this house.
Robert walks out. Later, a picture of two people in a boat is sketched in pencil. The drawing reads, Sam, happy birthday, love, Dad.
I know it's not much of a present, but happy birthday, son. See, it's you and me. Just the two of us out on the water. Used to.
It's beautiful.
Well, sure you'll be pleased to know that I've enrolled Sam in the Mercer Military Academy.
What?
It's the best thing for the boy. I'll give him a chance to be on his own, away from all this.
This isn't for your sake, it's for the boy's. Well, how do you feel about this, Sam? You want to get shipped off to some prison?
I don't know.
Well, I do. And you're not going to any damn military school.
I'm sorry you feel that way, Sam.
but the decision's been made.
Well, this is quite a moment for you, isn't it, Robert? You finally get your chance to get back. For all those years, I made you look stupid. You finally get your revenge.
This conversation is over.
Robert stands.
Wait, don't take him away from me. He's my son.
But he's my responsibility. Just like the rest of the mess I'm expected to clean up. Well, I got news for you, Sam. I'm going to do what I think is best. And you're just going to have to live with it.
Dad!
Be strong.
Robert walks away, leading Chip by the wrist. Sam sits as he watches them go. Later, Chip and Robert are at a train platform. Chip has a suitcase beside him. Robert checks his watch and they both look down the tracks.
Someone from the academy will meet the train and help get you squared away. Well, I guess that's it then.
Robert steps in front of Chip and looks down at him.
I did the best I could, Sam. I hope one day you'll understand.
Chip looks down. Robert pats him on the shoulder, then turns and walks away. Chip watches him leave. At the hotel room, grown Chip is still with Sam.
You wanted to go, didn't you? You don't know? All right, I wanted to go. I wanted to go someplace where I wasn't a freak, where people weren't staring at me. At last, honesty. What, now I'm supposed to feel guilty, is that it?
Who said you're supposed to feel guilty?
I loved you. I knew I was breaking your heart.
You were a kid.
Sam steps closer to him.
You were fighting for your life. You think I don't understand? You were fighting for your life.
Chip recalls the night his mother was killed. He remembers walking down the bloody stairs and his father rubbing his neck. In the hotel room, Sam sits on a dresser and Chip goes to the phone. He picks up Terry's brochure and dials.
Mr. Gilbert.
Hi, it's Sam R. Shepherd.
Chip and Terry are walking together.
What made you change your mind? I want it to end. Lies, rumors. I want to know who killed my mother. During the trial, the prosecution in the coroner withheld huge amounts of evidence, possibly evidence that could have cleared my father. The only way I can get access to it is by suing under the Freedom of Information Act. Well, I guess I can handle that.
Look, I know you normally charge for your time, but I guarantee you this case will give you enough
notoriety. I'm not worried about the money, Sam.
What are you worried about?
The other day at the City Club? The subject is still raw for you.
I can handle it.
If it turns out your father really was the murderer, will you be able to handle that?
Chip remembers military school. He recalls writing a letter at his desk where Sam's pencil drawing is framed.
Dear Dad, I'm honored to inform you that I've been elected senior class president. I say this in all modesty because while there are several other qualified candidates, none can claim a father who is as much of an inspiration as you are to me. I live each day as though you were watching me, and I stay strong because I know you are strong and fighting on because of me.
Medals hang near his desk.
But I must ask if everything is all right with you. I've noticed your letters arriving less frequently, and I can't help but wonder if something has happened.
A pastor walks in.
Sam, could I have a moment? I have a feeling no one's told you about this, but there's a woman who's coming to see you, and she says she's your mother.
What?
Yeah, I'm not so clear on it myself, but apparently your father met her through letters. She's from Germany, but I understand she's arranging to immigrate to the U.S. to marry him, as well as pay for a new appeal.
Chip goes to the door. He sees Ariana walking with some of his classmates. She's wearing pearls with a black dress and a leopard print coat.
It's me, Ariana. Oh.
Nice to meet you.
Oh, well, is that all you can say? After all, I'm going to be your new mother.
No, you're not. Don't ever say that to me again.
He grabs her by the wrists.
Of course. You're not a boy anymore. You're a big, strong man.
Later, he's looking at a framed photo of himself and his mother near the waterfront. He's in the storage bay, and he puts the photo down. He makes some notes, then picks up a small envelope. The front of it reads, Office of the Coroner, Evidence. He tips it into his hand, and a small vial slides out. Arian walks up.
Arian.
Sam. I just wanted to say goodbye.
Are you going back to Europe?
Yeah.
She looks around the storage bay.
What will you do with all this?
I don't know. I'm hoping that somewhere there's a key or a clue.
She nods, then steps toward him and holds his chin.
Good luck.
Thanks.
She kisses his cheek.
Oh, have you, been back to your old house?
No, I haven't. Why?
It's been sold again. It's a new owner as well. They're going to demolish it. I thought you'd want to know that.
Thanks.
Take care.
She walks out. Chip remembers visiting his father as a teenager.
You give Arian my letter?
Yes.
They thought they had me beat. Cutting me off, restricting my mail. Stupid bastard. Never occurred to him I could go through you.
Chip's in his military school uniform.
I guess not.
What's the matter? You said you didn't mind.
Well, I guess I thought at least some of your letters would be to me. Not just filth I have to decode for your girlfriend.
Well, I didn't mean to offend your delicate sensibilities. This woman happens to be something special to me. And if you can't handle it...
I didn't say that.
Oh, no. You're too refined. You're not like the rest of us sex-crazed commoners. You're a military man. Look at you in this monkey suit. What are you, some kind of faggot?
Chip stares at him, and his chin trembles.
Here, let me see those hands. Come on.
Chip turns his palms up toward his father.
Oh, yeah. I can see it. These are special hands, Sam. These hands are going to save lives someday. You'll see. Who knows? Maybe you and I could end up as a team. You go to Mexico, I get released. It could happen. You see, I'm going to be a doctor again.
Years later, Chip is outside their dilapidated old house. The windows are boarded up, the hedges are overgrown, and yellow tape hangs across the front entrance. Chip looks toward the house and remembers racing with his mother toward the house. He walks toward the shore and stands on the rocky beach. He looks out over the water, then back at the house. He picks up a stone and skips it across the water. Sam walks up to him in his prison uniform as Chip picks up another rock.
Talk to me.
I should go talk to Ariana.
Very good.
I should go to hell.
I'm so angry.
Look at you.
You're a thug. You're a pervert. Getting your son to be the mailman for your pornographic letters.
Spent 10 years in prison. See how you come out.
What about before? The nurses, the lab technicians, with any girl who had spread her legs?
Yeah, so?
So you make me sick. You haunt my life like you're some kind of conscience. Like you push me to see the truth. Well, I see it.
See what?
You were never a father to me. And you were never a husband to my mother.
Maybe they were right all along. Maybe I was what everyone said. Say it, Sam.
Chip turns away from him.
Come on. Accuse me.
Chip's walking away.
Come on. Be strong. Say it.
He turns around almost losing his balance.
You killed my mother. You killed my mother. You killed her.
He crouches close to the ground and brings his hand to his head.
Welcome to the bottom, Sam. You just met your demon.
Sam walks away as Chip continues to sob.
Gerber, the prosecutor, they all said there was no sign of a break-in, no forced entry.
Which is why they said it had to be your father.
Listen to this. There appears to be a freshly made tool mark on an outside door that leads to a basement. The mark appears to have been made by a chisel or wedge-like tool. That's from the report of Officer Henry Dombrowski, Cleveland Police.
Now, here's something else. A coroner's verdict dated July 4th, 1954, the day of the murder. They find that Marilyn Shepard came to her death as a result of multiple impacts to the head, fractures of skull, subdural hemorrhages, and contusions of the brain. They find it impossible to believe the explanation of her husband, therefore conclude that Marilyn Shepard came to her death as a result of the injuries caused and inflicted by Dr. Samuel Shepard. This was less than 24 hours after the murder, with a fresh trail that could have led in any number of directions.
You know, they didn't want a trail. They already had their convenient suspect. A brilliant and arrogant doctor who stuck to his story because he believed it. Because he believed innocent men don't get sent to prison in this country.
He never figured people would lie. They'd conceal evidence that would have cleared his name.
At military school,
spin.
Chip is marching with classmates. The pastor comes running toward him.
Sam, your father's been released.
He shows Chip a newspaper article.
In a stunning development, the United States Supreme Court has overturned the conviction of Dr. Samuel Shepard, calling it nothing less than a mockery of justice. The High Court concluded that massive prejudicial publicity, clear bias on the part of the judge, and proceedings overrun by the press together robbed Dr. Shepard of any chance at a fair trial.
Chip is packing.
The only question that remains in freeing Dr. Shepard, has the High Court returned a man to a society that still, in many ways, believes that he's guilty?
Where's my father? I don't understand.
The Chicago Tribune paid their expenses in exchange for exclusive coverage of the wedding.
At the train station.
You mean he's in Chicago?
And then Europe for the honeymoon. Ariane thought they needed time.
I skipped my graduation to be here.
I know. Things happen so fast.
Chip frowns.
But he wanted me to tell you that he's sorry, and he'll see you when he gets back.
An old headline reads, House guest testifies for prosecution. Chip is at Terry's house.
Bless Hoverston lived several weeks with your parents?
He was fired from a hospital in Los Angeles. My father was trying to help him get back up on his feet.
It appears he was fired for making advances toward female patients.
My mother hated him, but he left the day before the murder. I think he went to stay the weekend with some friends in Kent.
Kent's only 30 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
He could have come back the same night he left, finds the house locked, breaks in through the basement, leaves chisel marks on the door, then he goes upstairs to where your mother's...
No, that doesn't make sense. I mean, he was already living in the house. If he wanted to assault my mother, he had plenty of opportunities without having to break in.
You're forgetting he needed an alibi.
No, you're forgetting that when the police interviewed Les, they described him as having no visible cuts or bruises.
So?
So my mother bit her assailant hard enough for him to trail blood through the house, hard enough for her to break out two of her teeth and leave her assailant a marked man.
Honey, it's time to carve the turkey.
Two boys run to Terry.
We're in here, at the time the vision says. We were both in the same place. Don't you remember?
Chipper calls a holiday at Robert's.
Sam, you're keeping our guests waiting. We're ready to carve the turkey.
Chip's upstairs playing guitar. Robert opens the door to Sam, Ariane, and another couple.
Surprise! Happy to see us?
Oh, I hope we're not disturbing anything at all, Robert.
She kisses Robert's cheek.
Robert, I'd like you to meet some friends of mine. This is Lou Romano and his beautiful wife, Sandy.
It's Candy.
Oh, whatever. Lou and I met while we were in prison. He's a wrestler!
Ain't that right?
Damn right.
Ooh, hey. This is a hell of a place you got here, Bobby.
These your friends. Hey, nice to meet you. Maybe good old Robert hasn't told you about me. I am the black sheep of the family. Right?
Sam and Ariane, I'd like you to meet Russ and Carol Seiler. Russ has a private practice in town.
Oh, really? It's nice to meet you.
And this Hello? Is Bob and Eleanor nice Blanchard. Bob's a surgeon, Bayview.
Oh, really? Well, well, well.
Sam shakes his hand.
We've seen a lot of each other.
Nice to meet you, Dr. Shepard.
Oh, I love what you've done with this decor.
Hey, isn't Bob good at this stuff? I mean, decor and all this.
Sam sees Chip come down the stairs. He has long hair.
There he is.
Sam smiles.
He's my hero.
Chip runs to him and gives him a hug.
Hey, what are you, queer or something?
Sorry.
Yeah, well, with all this hair, you had me worried.
Sam looks closely at him.
I can see you're a man, through and through. Do you think, Robert, he came out pretty good, didn't he? Just somebody got shipped off and forgotten.
I don't suppose you've already had your dinner.
Oh, no.
As a matter of fact, we are a little bit hungry.
Yes.
Of course, there wouldn't be an inconvenience.
None at all, none at all. I'll just have Mrs. Avery set four more places.
Later, rather somberly.
Oh, what's the matter, Robert? You don't look like you're having any fun.
What are your plans, Sam?
What are my plans? Getting my license restored.
Yeah.
Practicing medicine. And who knows? Maybe even working with you again. That is, unless, of course, you end up working for me.
That's very funny.
Well, I'm a funny guy.
Sam stands.
But the main reason I'm here is because of you.
He points to Chip.
Because I wanted to tell you how grateful I am. Because if it hadn't been for you, I would have hung myself in that prison a long time ago.
I guess you're taking him with you then, huh? I mean, his stuff's right upstairs. Just a guitar and some clothes.
Robert looks at Chip.
Right, Sam?
Well, that's not exactly the way I planned.
No, Sam. You understand we're still on our honeymoon here.
It's okay. I see, so it's just a little inconvenient right now.
Sam glares at Robert.
Are you trying to embarrass me, Robert? Huh? Do you want it to look like I don't want my son with me?
Sam, we only have a one baby.
Shut up!
Look, Dad, it's okay. I can...
Can what? Stay here?
The Seilers stand.
Honey, I think it's best.
No. You're staying. We're the ones that are going. Go on, get your stuff.
Sam, but you promised me.
I said he's coming with us.
Sam looks at Chip.
Go on. Okay.
Chip stays seated, and Sam walks to him.
Come on. Say, we don't need this son of a bitch anymore.
Robert straightens his glasses. Years later, Terry is looking at documents.
You know, I've got three witnesses, and each one says your mother was having an affair with Sven Hauk.
Yeah, I've been hearing that for about 30 years. Sven Hauk was a fat slob who was 20 years older than my mother. If she really wanted an affair, she could have done a lot better than Sven.
All I'm saying is he was around, and your mother was alone a lot of the time. Hmm? She was lonely, and she knew your father was unfaithful.
Doesn't mean that she was unfaithful, too. All right, let's say she did have an affair. I mean, what reason would Sven have to kill her?
Maybe because she was pregnant. She thought it might repair her marriage, so she told Sven the affair was over, only he doesn't want it to end. So he sneaks back that night, passes your father asleep on the couch, makes his way upstairs, only this time your mother rejects him more forcefully, screams for your father.
Sven clubs him as he bursts into the room. I'm telling you, I've heard all this before.
But it could have been Hauk.
Yeah, and it could have been the milkman, but it wasn't, because my mother wasn't having an affair. She died in a halo of blood. She was raped and bludgeoned, her face smashed and her skull crushed. And it wasn't Sven Hauk, and it wasn't Les Hoverston, and I don't know how I know this, but I know it was somebody else. Somebody we're not seeing.
Yeah, it's been 6 months already.
Baby, my kid, I'm one of you. If you don't like it, you can get the hell out.
Oh, you son of a bitch, I'm from my mind.
Oh, you're my
hey,
bitch.
Hey, Dad.
Young Chip has an envelope that was pushed through the mail slot of a small apartment. Sam staggers to him and grabs it with a drink in his hand. He looks at it closely as he takes a sip. He sets the glass down and opens the envelope. He unfolds a letter and reads it.
You got your license back.
Sam nods, then hugs Chip. Later, Chip drives Sam to Bayview Hospital in a white convertible. Sam's wearing a suit.
Don't be nervous.
Don't worry. He'll take me back.
Chip starts to get out.
Why don't you wait here?
He stays in the car as Sam gets out and takes the letter from his breast pocket. Sam smiles and walks to the door as Chip watches from the car. Shortly after, Chip's walking through the hospital.
Look at my record.
He listens at a conference room door.
I have saved patients that other surgeons couldn't even touch.
We have no other choice, Dr. Shepard. Your background makes you a liability.
My background? You're sitting in my father's office. How is that for background? These walls, this room, my father built this hospital. How's that for background?
Sam gets on his knees.
Jeez. I'm begging you, I'm on my knees.
Dad, please. Don't.
Please.
Chip walks in.
It's okay.
He helps him up.
Please tell him, Sam. Just tell him I'm innocent.
It's okay. Come on, let's go. It's okay.
They walk out of the conference room together with their arms around each other. In the hallway, they pass Robert.
Sorry, Sam. Truly am sorry.
Sam looks at him, then keeps walking. Years later, Chip is standing outside the hospital at night. Sam is sitting on a bench in his prison uniform.
Every hospital, every clinic, every doctor in the state, they all said the same thing. As if they even bothered to let me interview.
Chip sits beside him.
Of course, by then you were in Boston.
Was I supposed to just stick around, watch you and Ariane destroy each other?
I wish you could have seen me, Sam. Treating patients in a motel room for $5 a visit. Diagnosing syphilis, suturing knife wounds, delivering illegitimate babies. You should have seen me, Sam.
Couldn't stand.
I know. I couldn't stand it myself.
Mom and Sven, you know, having an affair.
I don't know. Besides, wasn't it you who said it couldn't be Sven? Or Hoverston?
And I'm not sure anymore. I'm not sure of anything.
That's because you're forgetting. There was another witness.
I was asleep.
Sam looks at him.
The day before. You don't remember the day before?
Chip remembers the men from the cleaning service.
I had to put you on
salary. But don't get too close to the firewood.
Yes, sir, Mr. Everly.
In a library, Chip reads a microfiche newspaper article. Next to a photo of Mr. Eberling, a headline reads, Police find Marilyn Shepard's rings. Later, he's with Terry.
In 1989, Richard Eberling went to prison for beating an elderly woman to death. Now, in 1959, the same Richard Eberling was arrested for burglarizing homes. Now, among the stolen items in his possession at the time of the arrest was a ring. A ring that belonged to my mother.
Go on.
Turns out, the same Richard Eberling owned a window washing business. In fact, he was working for my parents around the time that my mother was murdered. I mean, I remember.
You sure?
When he's arrested in 59, 5 years after my mother was murdered, do you know what he tells the cops? My blood may be in the house where Marilyn Shepard was murdered.
He was abandoned at birth. He suffered seizures, memory losses. He bilks his foster parents out of thousands of dollars. Now, in 1956, he's driving with his girlfriend when his car ends up in a crash that kills her instantly, but miraculously, he walks away. Now, this girlfriend, by the way, just happens to be the nurse that treated my father's injuries the day of the murder.
You think Eberling was dating her because of her connection to the case?
I think Eberling was obsessed with my family, with my father's lifestyle, and with my mother's beauty, and that's why he broke into Robert's house to steal the ring that he didn't get the night he murdered my mother.
And nearly tore a finger off trying.
So now it's the 60s, and Eberling's working as a live-in caretaker for a wealthy widow named Ethel May Durkin, and he's managed to get himself included in her will. But when she starts suspecting his motives, she ends up dead, clubbed in the back of the head, but made to look like she accidentally fell down the stairs.
So he inherits her money.
Yeah, except for Ethel's two sisters, who are also her heirs. And do you want to know what happened to them? The first one dies, supposedly falling down a flight of stairs, and if that doesn't sound familiar enough, the second one is found bludgeoned to death, her head and face smashed, her nightgown ripped down the front, just like my mother.
And Eberling's only conviction was for the murder of Ethel May.
His lawyer has arranged for me to meet him in prison.
Want me to come with you?
Nope. I've been in prisons before.
Earlier, Chip is in college reading a poem.
The prison of knowing. The prison of waiting. Until the iron bars melt away. And all that's left in the last light of day is you and me. And our dreams gone by. In the shadows set free. Like my mother's sigh.
A young woman listens intently. After class, she walks up to him.
That was a beautiful poem.
Thanks.
Do you mind if I ask where it came from?
I guess it's a part of me I'm trying to let out. What year are you in?
Sophomore. You?
Yeah, same. Hey, you want to go out for a cup of coffee?
Yes, sir.
Hey, man. Is this your father? Killer Shepherd wrestling at the Civic.
A young man shows Chip a flyer.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
It's okay.
Okay, so give me a call later, okay? Don't let it get to you, man.
It reads, the Boston Bruiser versus Killer Shepherd.
If you'd rather be alone, I...
No. It's okay. I'm just never ready when the next thing hits, you know?
Are you gonna go see him?
At the wrestling match, Sam has a black mask over his face.
Killer Shepherd!
He's holding a noose. Samples off the mask and yells at the crowd.
Yeah! Yeah! Come on! Come on!
Lou, his friend from prison, is outside the ring.
Hey, shut up, man.
Sam and the Boston Bruiser are wrestling. Sam grabs his wrist, swings him around the ring, then throws him into the ropes. Sam scrapes his finger down the Bruiser's face, and the referee steps between them. The ref walks away, and Sam punches the Bruiser in the face. Chip and the woman from his class are sitting close to the ring as Sam throws his opponent to the ground. Sam yells at the crowd.
Come on, you hate me! Come on!
Chip watches somberly as his father is forced to the canvas. The Bruiser flips him over his shoulder, then he grabs Sam around the chin. Chip and his friend continue to watch as the crowd around them cheers. Sam has the bruiser in a full Nelson that is forced to the canvas again. As Sam struggles with his opponent, he sees Chip in the crowd and frowns. Sam closes his eyes and lets his head drop down. The bruiser rests his weight on him as Chip continues to watch. Chip and his friend walk backstage where Lou is arguing.
This is $220.
Sam takes some pills and Chip walks toward him, leaving his friend at the door.
We've worked together before. All I expect is a little bit of respect. Shut up, kid.
He sits next to Sam.
What are you doing this? You could have called me.
They look at Lou.
They're taking good care of me.
Yeah.
They're the only friends I've got. I've got nowhere else to go.
Look, you can stay with me.
Sam looks at him.
You mean it? Like before?
Come on, let's get out of here.
Listen.
Sam smiles as he picks up his flask and stands. Chip's friend is still waiting at the door.
Listen, I've had enough. Dad, this is Alyssa. Alyssa, this is my father.
Hi.
Hey, well, doing something right,
I see. She's just a friend.
Oh, well, then you're doing something wrong.
Sam puts his arms around both of them, and they walk out. Later, Chip is walking to his apartment building carrying some books. He enters the building and puts his books on the seat of a bicycle. He listens at his apartment door. He walks in and sees his father kissing Alyssa as he lies on top of her on a couch. Alyssa gets out from under him and looks at Chip. Chip glares at them.
Just get out.
Just came to.
She gathers her things and walks toward him. She looks at him for a moment, then walks out. Chip glares at his father. Chip walks toward him.
Oh, here, let me up.
Dad!
Sam tries to get up but falls. He stands and picks up a paper plate.
Don't throw me out.
I'm gonna be good. Oh, come on, you're not gonna let a girl come between us.
It's not the girl. She's not working.
Chip picks up some beer bottles.
That's right. You gotta have your own life, I remember.
Look, you wanna think I'm the bastard, fine.
No, it's me. I just can't help myself from screwing things up.
Sam tries to lower himself into a chair but misses and hits the floor. Chip helps him up.
Hey, won't put me in a half Nelson, huh?
Chip's holding him from behind. Sam turns and kisses his cheek. Later, outside the Boston bus terminal, Sam is sitting on a bench with a suitcase next to him. He rubs his hands together and squeezes his eyes shut. He looks at his suitcase and takes out his flask. With his back to the terminal door, he stands and gulps from the flask. He screws the cap back on, then sits. He wipes his mouth as he puts the flask away, then takes a deep breath and looks straight ahead. Some weeds are growing near the street corner. He picks up a suitcase and walks to the corner.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Coach 927, departing for Cleveland in 5 minutes. 927, departing for Cleveland in 5 minutes.
Sam crouches in front of the weeds. He looks around as he kneels in the dirt. Chip watches him through a window in the terminal as Sam pulls up some Queen Anne's lace. Chip walks outside.
Hey, Dad. It's time.
Sam grabs his suitcase and stands with a bouquet of carefully picked weeds. He smiles and holds them out to Chip.
This is for you.
Chip takes the bouquet and frowns.
Call Robert when you get into town.
Yes, sir. Right away, sir.
Sam salutes him.
Dad.
I will.
Here's your ticket.
Sam folds it and looks toward the bus.
Here.
Chip holds out some cash, and Sam shakes his head.
That's all I got.
Sam hesitates, then takes the money. As he takes it, he opens Chip's hand and gently touches his palm.
You have beautiful hands. Did I ever tell you that?
As he rubs the back of his hand, Chip's chin begins to quiver. Sam hugs him tightly. They step away from each other, then Sam picks up his bag and walks to the bus. Chip follows him.
Hey, good luck.
Sam turns partway toward him, smiles, and gets on the bus without looking back. Chip watches as he finds a seat near the window. Chip salutes him as the bus pulls away. He stands and watches the bus roll down the street. Years later, he's sitting at a table in a prison. A guard pushes a prisoner in a wheelchair up to the table.
Richard Eberling.
So we meet again. Last time I saw you, you were just a little tad.
That's right.
Now you're here because you think I did it. The ugly outsider, the dirty commoner, it had to be me. Because it couldn't possibly have been that golden boy surgeon, could it?
Well, I didn't expect you to confess.
Yeah, well, I could tell you what really happened. If I thought you could take it. You see, when you work in folks' houses, you come across some dirty secrets. Yeah, go ahead. Turn your little recorder on.
Eberling puts a sketch pad on the table, and Chip turns on his tape recorder.
See, it was the day before the murder. I was cleaning windows in your folks' house when I heard Esther Houck screaming at your mother upstairs. If you don't stay away from my husband, I'm going to kill you. See, Esther was insanely jealous of her husband, and she was half out of her mind in between her medication and her drinking problems. And she just knew that your mother and Sven were flaunting it right under her nose.
He has a sketch of the house.
So she decided to come back later that night and put a stop to it. What she had, see, was this iron patty shell maker. And what she did, see, was stand by that bed where your mother, your beautiful mother, just lay there.
He points to the bedroom.
And then this rage started filling up inside her. And then she just started wailing away. Of course, your dad hears the screams, but by the time he gets up the stairs, all he sees is Esther covered in blood and moaning like an animal. So he calls Sven, and the two of them cook up this story about some bushy-haired intruder, which would have held up if that coroner Gerber hadn't gone after your father. And then if good old Sven hadn't jumped on the bandwagon, you know, to keep his own dirty little secrets hid.
How was it that your blood was in the house?
Like I said, I was cleaning the windows the day before, and I cut my finger on that one in the kitchen. You remember that window, don't you, Chip?
You know what I think? I think you're a liar.
Oh, sure, you like to believe that, huh?
And that scar?
Eberling has a scar on his wrist.
Didn't you get that when my mother bit you?
Wrong.
You didn't trail blood through the house as you ran out?
Wrong again.
You killed my mother just like you killed Ethel Durkin.
Wrong.
Chip turns off the recorder.
Well, we'll see.
He walks away. Later, he's driving down an empty highway. He remembers when he was younger with long hair driving a Volkswagen bus with a young woman laughing in the passenger seat. The outside of the bus is painted with flowers and the word peace.
Sam, I've been trying to get you. I called the school, but they said you'd stopped going.
Robert, how did he die? The paper didn't say.
They found him on the floor of his apartment. He'd been drinking and taking pain pills, I guess.
Chip kisses his girlfriend.
They said he'd been going downhill for a while. They said he had a bunch of dead flowers in his hand.
She gets on the bus, and Chip walks away, remembering Sam's words.
You're going to have to stand up for yourself. You have to be strong. Who knows? Maybe you and I could end up as a team. You go to med school. I get released. It could happen. I'm going to be
a doctor. Make it best you not go to the funeral. You'd be surrounded by reporters. You'd never stand a chance.
Head and face bloodied by some 35 blows.
Skull
fractures.
Killer Shepard gonna die.
Broken nose. Two broken teeth. The murder weapon was a surgical instrument. The kind an osteopath might use.
Chip picks up a straight razor.
His hands have greatness in them. Just remember that. You have a special gift.
You know what it's like to come home and find your wife in bed in a pool of blood.
Magical powers to heal people like that.
Chip was my nickname. My real name is Sam R. Shepard, just like my father.
Your grandma was a coward. Only cowards kill themselves.
Because if it hadn't been for you, I would have hung myself in that prison a long time ago.
He presses it to his wrist, then lays in the back of the bus. From the outside, a single light shines from inside the dark bus. Chip touches a scar on his wrist. He's sitting on a bench outside a hospital when Robert walks up.
Well, I guess today is the day.
Chip has a duffel bag next to him.
I guess so.
You know, I'll be happy to drive you to the airport.
Oh, no, that's okay. I already called the cab.
Robert sits on the bench.
How do you feel?
Fine.
You got all your things? Your medications?
Yes.
Well, I imagine the weather will be nice in Boston at this time of the year. Have you thought about what you're going to do when you get there?
Well, a friend of mine's a dental hygienist. He says it's a pretty good job. Helping people. Using my hands.
Chip looks down at his hands.
I think I have good hands.
Sam, the past is the past. As your doctor and your uncle, I strongly advise you, don't go back. It's dangerous for you. Do you understand?
Chip looks at him, then looks down. Robert stands, then slowly walks away. Years later, old newspapers are spread on a table. The different headlines read, Supreme Court declares trial a farce. Dr. Shepard and family attend Marilyn's funeral. And Judge Blythen denies motion for new Shepard trial.
Like I said, I was cleaning the windows the day before, and I cut my finger on that one in the kitchen. You remember that window, don't you?
Chip is with Terry, and he stops the tape of Eberling.
He's a liar. He never actually worked at my parents' house. His assistant did, and his name is Vern Lund.
So the only possible explanation why Eberling's blood was inside your house...
was because he killed my mother.
I want you to contact Eberling's attorney. If his client's as innocent as he claims, they'll have no trouble getting us a blood sample for comparison.
Yeah, but comparison to what? We don't have any blood from the scene of the crime.
Yes, we do. We have.
He takes the vial from the evidence envelope he found in the storage bay.
A drop of blood from my parents' house. Now I gotta go find Lund.
Later, Chip is with Lund at a farm.
I remember, because it was so different. See, I was only 18, so he worked with me on every job except your folks' house. He had me do that one myself.
So, do you mind?
No, go ahead. So he was never inside the house?
Oh, yes, sir, he was, because he gave the estimate. That meant going inside and counting windows.
I'm sure he was all through the house.
Chip is taping their conversation.
And what happened next?
Well, that was strange, too. Because your mom, her murder, it happened over the weekend, and I still hadn't heard about it till Monday when I was in the car with Eberling. And he told me your mom got raped and killed, and that only he knowed who did it.
And it shocked me.
I mean, it really shocked me. So I'd just been there the Friday before. She'd been so nice to me.
And what did you do?
Well, I guess it just scared me. So I quit working for him the next day and tried to put the whole thing out of my mind.
The police never interviewed you about this?
Oh, yes, sir, they did. And I told them all I'm telling you now. And when Eberling was on trial for murdering that widow, I contacted the same police department again. See, I saw a connection the way that woman died and the way your poor mother died. But the police, they never did anything about it.
Shortly after, Chip is on the phone while driving.
Any luck with Lund?
I'm coming back with a signed affidavit. I think you'll find it very interesting. What about Eberling?
No, he's refusing to cooperate. The chance of us getting a court order to force him are slim and none. Especially with only one drop of unidentified blood to base a comparison on.
Okay. I'll get back to you.
Okay, bye.
Okay.
Later, Chip's in the coroner's office.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you for seeing me, Dr. Belraj.
How can I help you?
Well, during my father's trials, none of the state's evidence was ever made available to my family.
We are talking about a trial that took place over 40 years ago.
Well, for years there have been rumors of a vault. Materials, evidence that Dr. Gerber kept under his personal lock and key. And even though I filed under freedom of information, I have yet to receive a single document in response to that suit.
Are you accusing me of withholding evidence?
No, Dr. Belraj. I'm in no position to accuse anyone. Because, you see, if I can't produce any more evidence, my mother's murderer will never face justice, and I will have to live the rest of my life knowing that I failed her. So really, I'm here to beg you. If you know of anything in the archives or warehouse,
I'll let you know.
Thank you.
Your Honor, we base our petition on three issues. First, the massive misconduct by the state throughout Dr. Shepard's 1954 trial. Second, that evidence which could have exonerated Dr. Shepard was deliberately excluded by the prosecution. And lastly, the discovery of Richard Eberling, who's a much more likely suspect than Dr. Shepard ever was.
But even if I order Mr. Eberling to submit to a blood draw, isn't it true that the only thing you have to compare with his sample is a single drop of blood in a vial from a garage?
Your Honor, it was in a box of my father's belongings in an envelope marked evidence from the coroner's office.
But you have no proof of this, correct? No chain of evidence, no authentication. You have no idea where this drop of blood may have been all these years.
Your Honor, if I might approach.
If you have something to add to these proceedings, please identify yourself to the court.
The coroner approaches the bench.
For the record, my name is Elizabeth Belraj, and I am the Cuyahoga County Coroner. After a thorough investigation by my department, a vault of information was discovered belonging to this case.
She hands a thick binder to the judge.
This is a partial list of its contents, including some 91 evidence envelopes consisting of blood, vaginal swabs, fingernail scrapings, hair samples, etc. All of which I am recommending be made available to the plaintiff for DNA testing in this case.
All right. Given this basis for comparison, I'm ordering a blood sample be taken from Mr. Eberling.
At a computer.
It wasn't Marilyn Shepherd's blood. It wasn't Dr. Shepherd's blood because we know he wasn't bleeding. No, it was the murderer's blood. It was Richard Eberling's blood on the stairs, on the porch, his DNA. In the sperm, Richard Eberling's DNA. This is the same Richard Eberling convicted of theft and burglary. The same Eberling convicted of forging a will and perjury. The same Richard Eberling convicted for the murder of Ethel May Durkin and suspected in the murder of several others. His blood, his sperm, his pattern of violence over and over and over again. Therefore, Your Honor, we demand nothing less than a declaration of innocence granted to the deceased Dr. Shepherd and an indictment of Richard Eberling for the murder of Marilyn Shepherd.
The judge looks...
Well, I think we can all sympathize with the plaintiff.
Oh, my God.
Your Honor.
Sam, I know you mean well.
Mr. Shepherd, if you have something to say to this court.
Yes, Your Honor.
Chip stands.
My father wasn't not guilty. My father was innocent. And he told that truth over and over and over again, and no one listened. Not the press, that assumed it had to be him and then made sure he was punished accordingly. Not the city that turned into a lynch mob. And not the courts that turned his trial into a witch hunt. The cops, the courts, and the people of the state decided that he had to pay. And they took away his freedom. And his pride. And they took away his family and his career. And in so doing, they put my father to death just as sure as Richard Eberling beat my mother to death. And why can no one admit they made a mistake? No one says, "We're sorry, Dr. Shepherd. You were right. You were telling the truth all along." Well, I'm here telling the truth. And I only wish my father could hear this. And I only wish my mother could see, because when it comes to the sympathy of this court...
The judge stares as tears run down Chip's face.
I swear that the people who took the lives of my parents will be made responsible. And I will not rest until that justice is done.
Later, Chip and Terry are walking along the water near the Shepherd's old home.
So what are your plans?
Well, I've decided to work to abolish the death penalty. Next week for a demonstration walk from Boston to New Orleans.
And after that?
Well, we'll have to see, won't we?
You're quite a guy, Sam.
You too. Done any of this without you?
No, I don't know. I think you could have done it all without me.
Terry, I want to thank you for being my lawyer.
They shake hands.
And being my friend. Thanks.
It's an honor, Sam. Truly an honor.
Terry pats him on the arm and they keep walking. Later in his hotel room, Chip wraps up the blood-stained quilt and stares at it. The image of Sam's father walks up wearing street clothes. He smiles.
You did it, Sam. You faced the truth, and you set us both free.
I'm never going to see you again, am I?
You don't need me anymore?
You're your own man now.
You
proved it to yourself.
His father puts his hands in his pockets.
Now there's no stain. There's no secret. There's no shadow to be afraid of.
Just wish I could have believed in you more before.
Chip lowers his head and his father sits next to him on the bed.
Believe in yourself, Sam. In your strength. In your courage. In your innocence.
Chip looks at him.
Let me see those hands.
Chip smiles and shows him his hands. His father smiles and gently turns them over.
You're a fine man, Sam. And I'm proud to be your father.
Later, Chip is looking at his father's gravestone as he toys absently with a small stick. The stone has the medical symbol caduceus on it and reads, "In loving memory of Samuel H. Shepherd, he who endures, conquers, 1923 to 1970. Sam walks away from it slowly. Stick aside as he goes. The picture freezes and the screen reads, "The Shepherd murder case is involved among the oldest blood evidence ever to be submitted for DNA testing. This new scientific evidence unequivocally demonstrates that Dr. Shepherd did not kill his wife. Rather, to a virtual certainty, it points to Richard Eberling as the killer. Richard Eberling died of natural causes on July 25, 1998, while serving a life sentence for the murder of Ethel May Durkin. Sam Reese Shepherd continues his efforts to have his father declared innocent."